and gentlemen, you are listening to Unqualified with your host, Anna Faris.
Hey, dear listeners, I recently sat down with my good friend Justin Long. He is so brilliantly funny, and I was lucky enough to work with him on Waiting and Mom, and I hope you enjoy our talk. It's been a minute, and so I'm like getting kind of back into the swing of things, and I'm so glad you're here. Thank you so much.
I changed a lot.
I know. Okay, wait. So how long are you in LA for?
So I'm here till the 30th.
Do you like LA?
That's a tough question right off the bat. This is one of my favorite. Well, I say it's tough because normally, if you had asked me this last night in my little apartment off of Franklin, I would have said no. I miss New York. I miss my friends. I miss my family. I live in Massachusetts on a lake, and it's really pretty this time of year. So I'm missing that a lot. But being here, I have a different answer because there's something about this. We're on the lot. We're on Warner Brothers lot.
Yeah.
It's really fun to be. Yeah. I have such good memories here, and specifically here, stage 20. Unless you don't want people to know that.
No. I love that because you were like we're now on season seven, season fucking seven,
wow.
You were on our first season.
Yeah.
And I love acting with you.
Likewise, and I have such good memories of it. So
isn't it crazy though to also be able to, like, I get these moments where I'm driving onto the lot and I remember 20 years ago, like parking really far away, sweating and like attempting to kind of look attractive with my audition sides in my hand. Uh-huh. And some crew guys would be like, break a leg. Or they probably said good luck or whatever.
Good luck, sweetheart.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to need it.
Yeah, totally.
And now they're like, hello, Anna.
Yeah.
It's good to remind yourself.
You know what I mean.
Of course. In fact, I had an experience here that was not as she, not as where I was guest starring on a show here. And there was a lot of, there's a hierarchy of status, success. I don't know if success is the word that you can measure based on your parking proximity to where you're shooting.
Oh, yes. You know? Oh, completely.
Well, that's when you know you've really made it. But it's true. When we used to, and reading for auditions and stuff where they would make you park.
Oh, my God. Because you didn't have, I mean, you came from some degree of theatrical background, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, I sure did. I was...
Who's this?
A theatrical guy. It's not...
Theo.
Theo. Yeah.
Theo the theatric.
Yes, I did. I did Pippin for 12 years off Broadway.
Not that far off.
It was in Poughkeepsie. I did a lot of plays in Poughkeepsie. I went to college in Poughkeepsie and I fell in love with acting, doing plays. Yeah.
How do you feel about living in Massachusetts? Does it feel isolating?
Yes, but in a really great way. It's not so much that I'm not so remote that I can't go to a grocery store or, you know, see it. No, I truly. But you just.
But
have
I
to,
won't.
But I no.
Theo would never.
Land. Oh, Theo. Oh, Theo would. He would have a hard time there.
No.
Theo wouldn't
Theo
enjoy
would
that
send
existence.
Brian.
Yeah. He would need an errand boy.
Yeah. For the sheep's milk. Wait, do you know Edgar Oliver? I'm off on a tangent that we'll probably cut.
Edgar Oliver.
Yeah.
The name sounds.
He does. The moth, and he's like, he says things like, mother, Helen and I went on a bike ride and we rode as fast as we could. Yeah. I have to send you some links of it. He's genius.
Anna's,
anyway, whatever.
You're being slightly hypnotic right now.
I know.
You have big eyes and you're doing this voice.
That's why we will kill you.
Well, I'd welcome a
isn't
death
that
like
the
that.
Way he would like to end your life?
It sounds a little like Vincent Price.
The journey that we'll all be going on.
Oh, no. I want to hear him now. Or okay, I just want to hear you doing it.
I'll send you the link. I wish I could do it better.
As far as I know, it's perfect. I don't think I've ever
heard it. Oh, I have to send you the link. Anyway. Okay, so how is your experience podcasting?
Wait, you just...
What were you going to say?
I'm curious why you said you might cut that out. You just knew going in that it wasn't going to be a...
I just don't know if our listeners know.
It's funny... Because I've been noticing myself, like, censoring myself in life more since I started doing the podcast.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Do you find that? It happened at Trader Joe's the other day where I was about to, you know how they're always at Trader Joe's, they make them say, which is really off-putting to me. They make them say, like, how's your day going so far? Or, like, you know, it could be like 8 at night. They'll say, like, what do you have planned?
Did you bring your bags?
Yeah. Well, that I always feel such a sense of shame when I don't.
I know.
But the girl said, she asked about the bags, and I said, you know, I don't have them. I'm going to need one, unfortunately. Catholic guilt was like, I'm so, so sorry. And she goes, oh, that's okay. And I said, yeah, and I was about to tell her why I didn't have
them. Oh my God. I totally overexplained.
Well, I normally do too, but I think since I've started this podcast, I've realized that, oh, that won't be interesting for her. I kind of cut the head. I guess I'm just censoring myself.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I don't want to be rude because I'm going to need some things from them later. Yeah,
so you have to explain why. I constantly call myself out. If I do need a special thing or like, oh, you know, I change my order a lot at restaurants. It drives my friends nuts.
Oh, that would make me crazy.
I do it all the time. Oh, why? You know what? I'm never happy.
When was the last time you were a waiter? Was it in the movie that we did together, Waiting?
I think so. Yeah, a girl said to me, yes.
You have to be a waiter.
Yeah, I know. I was for a while.
Oh, you were?
I was
okay.
For a couple of years. Okay. As were you, I think.
Yeah.
I think it helps a lot. I think it helps.
It helps. But then you're that person who changes their order.
I know.
Why? What makes you indecisive like that?
It's hard for me to commit.
Yes. All right. I would say that. I think that's wonderful self-reflection.
I have a hard time committing.
I've known you for what, 20 years now?
Oh God. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. We did, hey dear listeners, Justin Long and I did Waiting together back in 2001, I believe,
it was
spring.
It was 2004. I remember exactly because that's how I kind of gauge the passing of my time. Is based on jobs.
It's and like camp.
2005, it came out.
It came out in 2005. But we did it in 2004 before the hurricane.
Yes, we did it before. I don't know why I got so excited about that. Yes, the hurricane. Theo's back.
Well, because the city felt still like
what I'm a sure. hurricane it was. No, well, we shouldn't joke about it. But it was an awful thing. So Anna, myself, and Rob Benedict and Caitlin Doubleday. Who are other actors in the movie?
We used to go to this bar on Bourbon Street, not one of like the ones where you have like, you know, shots in like weird medical
tubes.
It was our kind of deal.
It was our Cheers.
Yeah,
but
it was our Cheers.
But it was a cheesy kind of touristy.
Yeah, it was called the Cajun Cabin. Uh-huh. And
there's nothing Cajun about it. It was such an appropriation of that culture, which is a beautiful culture.
We went there so frequently that they would invite us up on stage, and we would get to play the washboard and
the spoons. We were often hungover.
Yeah, which our characters would be. So
that's how we justified it. We were like, we're method actors. We're, you know, because the whole movie took place over the course of one day after the night of this big party. So we were like, well,
yeah,
Dean,
yep,
or Serena.
Yeah, we got to keep it going.
Yeah, we got to really power through. And those crews would go out constantly too.
Oh yeah, I think that's what happens when you film in New Orleans.
It was my first time in New Orleans too. I don't know if you'd.
I have it as a kid, but do you remember Uta Hagen's tumbling class?
Yes, of course.
Do I talk about the same things over and over again? Maybe.
Well, they're worth talking about it for us because we had so much fun. Anna would do this. Anna would pretend to be this legendary acting coach, Uta Hagen, but she would only do tumbling. It was as if Uta Hagen was like, it was like an advanced level Uta Hagen course where we had done all the other training and now we're just going to do tumbling for some reason. And Anna would also do a thing where she would just disappear at one point.
Yeah.
And
hide in the closet.
Well, we'd be in your room often.
I know. We'd just hide either under the bed or in the closet.
Oh, where did Anna
go? I hope they go. It was just like, I don't want to kick them out, but I really hope they go.
Is that what it was?
Yes.
People please. It's your people pleasing.
Totally.
Thing.
That was like my people pleaser up to like level 11.
You don't want to. It's hard to say to your friends, especially
like,
you guys have to
get out.
You gotta go.
It's like I invited you here for the Uta Hagen tumbling class after, you know, 7 minutes. Actually time for you guys to go. But I can't do that. I just hid.
You'd hid under a bed or in a bathroom, but we never took it personally. Or it was always a very sweet way to
get everybody out.
If anything, we liked you so much that like, knowing that you would want to be in bed, and it made me feel bad. Like, oh, for the last 12 minutes, she's been wanting to do something else and not being able to say it. What a great shoot.
That was really fun. That was really fun.
It's weird to see every once in a while I see that movie, and I think I remember the fun times making it, but it wasn't as reflected in the final product.
You're so right. Yes. We had so much joy that wasn't like necessarily
captured.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So wait, we have to do some other things, but podcasting. Do you listen to your podcast back? Like, so yes. Are you now self? Is that why you were talking about the Trader Joe's element? Is because you now hear your own voice?
Possibly.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Because I don't.
And I know the way it sounds now.
Yeah, but and I also noticed I say this a lot. I say yeah a lot. I affirm. I don't know
but
why.
But I think it's a great thing.
Well, it's,
and I don't think anyone else notices that.
I read a comment that people
do. No, don't read that. No.
It's the debt. It's awful.
You can't.
Yeah.
You can't.
Do you not read them?
No, I don't. Because it truly is like you could have, you know, 10 really positive ones. Yep. And then there's one that's like, oh, that just nags on your brain. And it's so no.
Those are the ones that I retain.
Yeah, of course.
That live in me.
Of course. So no, I don't think you should do it. And I probably foolishly so. I don't like to watch my face make movement.
So you could watch yourself sleeping.
No. Oh, no, God, no. Fuck. Are you kidding? That'd be the worst.
So you never watch mom? You don't watch?
No. It's just that I constantly think like I didn't realize that my face moved like that that I said that thing. I don't know.
You're critical. You're very self-critical.
Aren't we all? It's in a narcissistic way, though, which I guess is self-critical.
With the podcast, though, I need to hear it because I like to weigh in on what gets
right
cut out, and like I like to.
I don't know. I think you got to like trust somebody else to do that.
Well, I trust
because otherwise, I don't like. I don't think that. I think the beauty of this format as well is that. That there's an honesty in it, openness.
Yes.
And so I wouldn't, I don't know. I don't want to censor myself too much.
I think when I say censor, I meant that I think it's actually a good thing.
Wait, let me ask you this before we get into some of this stuff. But are you the kind of person that could potentially sail around the world by yourself?
Sailing skills wise, no.
Would you
I mean, if somebody say it, if somebody did it for me, I mean, I couldn't trust myself.
Could you be by yourself on the open ocean for, let's say, this wouldn't be around the world, but let's say, you know, 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Open ocean. No chance of like a squall moving in and killing me.
Well, yet to be determined. I'm
laughing because this reminds me of a story you told me once.
What?
Well, I was going to say, do I get any writing implements or anything to do? Do I have any?
Oh, I have no idea what story you're about to tell me. Yeah. You get,
okay.
You get a couple of moleskin books that your friends gave you.
Okay.
You get like a feather pen with ink.
Okay, a quill pen. Yeah. That's the only pen I use.
Yeah.
Yes. For 2 weeks, yes. Any okay. more than 2 weeks, I think I'd start climbing the walls.
The mast.
Yeah.
What story?
Well, this because I started thinking about if I don't have an outlet, like some sort of creative thing, I would start getting fidgety after a couple, like maybe a half hour. And then I remember you told me, I think you told me the story about, this is a great story about Ben Kingsley.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, a friend of mine's about to work with. Sorry. I'm sorry. Sir Ben Kingsley.
I love it that you remember that.
It's the best. I'm sure he listens to this. So, hopefully, he won't mind.
Of course.
A lot of knights listen to this.
Yeah.
Show, right?
Of course.
You're not number one among knights.
Dames and knights. Yeah. For sure.
A lot of dames love this show. So you tell the story because it's your story.
No. I want to hear how you remember it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because I've retold stories that I thought were accurate that are totally inaccurate, but I've added little embellishments along during some of the retelling. So tell me if this is true.
Okay.
Anna was flying, I believe, from LA to London. It was a long flight.
It was from New York to Madrid.
Oh, weird. Okay, there you go. I've already gotten it wrong.
Nope, but you're doing great. It was a long flight. We had to circumnavigate a hurricane.
Oh,
so
it was 8 hours.
It was like 10 hours.
Oh, okay.
Because we really had to go all the way around this hurricane, whatever.
That makes it better, the 10 hours. Because at a certain point, I was like, I must be getting this wrong. So, Anna's sitting next to Sir Ben Kingsley.
Yes.
You know him, you love him.
Well,
Gandhi's.
We were in the same. We're in the same movie. The production had chartered a jet, which sounded awesome, but it turns out it was like a 757 from 1956.
Oh my god!
Like it was so rickety.
There were ashtrays everywhere.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, there was like the screen that like came down with a super blurry movie.
Wow.
Anyway, it sounded fun until it was like. This plane, I don't know, like, is it fit to fly?
Oh, that's scary.
Okay, but wait, go on.
The pilot had like goggles and a scarf.
Yeah, totally.
So you So this is what you said. You said the whole time.
Yes.
I thought for the whole flight, which now makes it weirder that you went through turbulence and stuff, Sir Ben Kingsley was doing nothing.
Yes.
And I remember you, and I remember asking you like, well, what do you mean? Doing? He was reading? Or, nope.
Nothing. He was just staring at the back of his seat. It was so fucking weird.
That is such an understatement.
It was
because at first when you hear that story, it's like, oh, that's not that weird. He just wasn't doing it. But then think about it. Think about a minute of nothing.
I know.
Just staring ahead.
I know. And then I had to awkwardly climb over him. Well, it was like, did he die? Like with his eyes open?
You like hold a mirror in front of his face. Yep. There's still fog
just
on it.
Truly staring at the back of the seat.
Crazy.
For hours and hours and hours.
Was he on Valium or something?
I don't know. I don't know. It was the oddest thing. It was so fucking weird.
It was like a hologram of Ben Kingsley that was just stuck.
Did I tell you about when he brought me chocolates?
It sounds familiar, but please tell me again. Because your Ben Kingsley stories are the best.
So I'm doing this scene and it's, you know, July. And we're in like Midtown or whatever. I'm not that familiar with New York, but it sounds like
Was it really like touristy and packed?
Yeah, we were shooting at this health food store that my character ran.
Right, yeah.
And he was off that day, Sir Ben Kingsley was. And he came in and everyone's sweating and we're trying to get through this scene or whatever. And he comes in and then we sort of stop production because Sir Ben Kingsley has arrived at the health food store. And he comes up to me and he says, chocolates for my leading lady. And I opened up the box.
It was in the middle of everybody. In the middle of the crew.
And it said, inside it said like Waldorf Astoria, which is where he was staying. Yes. It was like his nighttime chocolates. And for the rest of the shoot, I got so much shit from everybody. Like, chocolates for my leading lady. And they had to be like, oh, thank you so much. Because that's what the pressure that you have as a woman. Like, oh, gosh, from Sir Ben Kingsley. Like,
it's a combination of sweet. It's a little creepy.
And then as a wrap gift, he gave me his orchid from the Waldorf Astoria. I'm like, truly, the vase said Waldorf Astoria. Like, he took...
At least he didn't give you a Bible.
That's true. Sir Ben Kingsley, if you are out there listening to this, I love you very much. Thank you for my chocolates and my orchid.
Mini soaps and shampoos for my leading lady.
For my leading lady. Here's a small washcloth.
A late night menu slippers. For my leading lady.
For my leading lady. But man, I got like for the rest of the shoot, everyone was like, oh, for my leading lady.
A magazine of things to do in New York for my leading lady.
Oh, God. And I, at the time, I had grown out my armpit hair. That's a whole other
story. Yeah, because you were playing this very, like, crunchy, hippie.
Yeah. And so, and I'm in, like, it was, and I'm in these oversized, whatever. It was just like, I did not feel like a leading lady.
It's true. It's such a, like, classy, like, old-timey way to, like, address an actress.
Somebody with gnarly armpit hair. And, yes. Can I ask you some things?
Please.
Okay, I have two relationship questions for you, and then
good.
If you feel like doing an improv.
Yes, of
okay.
course.
So you can pass on any of these.
Okay.
Number one, the worst way you've ever been broken up with.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, I broke up with somebody over the phone.
That's fine.
It was a lot pretty.
At least it wasn't text, right?
It's not. I don't think it's fine. In my defense, I was in Hong Kong. She was in Japan. We were in totally different countries. But I knew it wasn't. It's my guilt.
Really?
Yeah. I couldn't look this person in the face. I had tried to do it before, and she had such an angelic, sweet. The second any tears entered her eye, I couldn't do it. I could not bring
Was she a good crier?
a heartbreaking crier. I guess I'm defending it.
She didn't even like, well, I'm sure she felt it. I don't mean to insult you in any way.
Thanks.
But,
yeah.
But some, people are really good at just being able to bring tears.
She wasn't an actress. She wasn't. Oh. No, no.
I broke up with my first husband
yeah.
over phone.
Other memories from New Orleans, because I remember when he came to visit.
That's right.
And I think we talked about this.
Yeah.
Why
did I get, well, whatever. Oh, God.
Or were you just going to say, why did I get myself?
Well,
you're preaching to the choir.
I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to do a face-to-face thing when sometimes it can be detrimental in terms of putting the person you're breaking up with on the spot. And it can be,
right.
And then you can also get sucked back into something, to a decision that you've made.
Exactly. Exactly. Based on things like guilt or
right.
variables that are, don't have anything to do with how you're really feeling.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah. So I think that actually
trying to justify it.
Like, no. But I actually think that we've like somehow accepted this culture of like, oh, breakups need to happen
right.
in person. When I actually think it's easier to digest for both parties. If there is, I guess I am trying to justify this, but I do think that there is that digestion period that needs to happen.
Yes. I think here's what helped to further defend myself. I followed it up with a very thorough, very reflective, self-reflective and letter that...
Text?
No, it wasn't a text. It was an email. It was actually not... I mean, not that that makes a difference, but it sort of explains... Because I think there's the selfish part is that there's a lack of closure. You could argue that there's a lack of closure when you don't.
But I have very strong opinions about closure. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it ever really happens. Mm-hmm. I think we talk about it as though there will be.
Yeah.
But I think that it's something that you're looking for, that we will always be searching for. Mm-hmm. Like, why didn't that work? Why did I make a commitment that didn't work? Mm-hmm. And then when it doesn't work or whatever, let's meet up for a drink so we can get closure. It's like that's not truthful in my head. It's like that's something that's like, okay, that people are searching for something, whatever is wrong within themselves or whatever, like how they couldn't make something work. But
so you don't think it's there's something that's there's pure closure. Like we're going to close this.
No.
Yeah, well, especially with somebody that you were that intimate with.
Right. I don't think it's possible. And I think that that's okay. And we need to accept that idea that like we learn from heartbreak. We learn from rejection. We learn from rejecting other people. And I think that that's okay. The idea, because we get a lot of calls with people wanting closure. And it's like, no. What I hear a lot of times is that you don't want closure. You want to know what went wrong and pulling the thread on like you either want more of the relationship, you need to be accepted. And I say this because I've felt these things a lot. So the acceptance of like, okay, I went through that specific heartbreak at that period of in my life and learning that like love happens at different periods of your life, like the different intensities of love. Like when you're a teenager, it's like all consuming. It doesn't even matter who it is, as long as they're like hot and whatever.
Well, that's
and you're
what I was
like,
going to say. How much do you think it's now chemical? I mean, this sounds like a very cynical 40-year-old question to ask, but like I look back at some of those feelings and relationships and I wonder now how much chemicals played a part.
Oh, completely. Yeah. And if somebody that felt like out of your attractiveness level liked you, it's so much less about who that person is because you're in such a self-absorbed place in life.
Of course, yeah.
That you can't
separate.
Really. Yeah.
Well, I also, when you're searching for things like closure and when you're analyzing a relationship, what went wrong, oftentimes if you distill it enough, it comes down to something very hurtful, which is you just don't want to be with that person. You maybe never really wanted to be with that person. And it got, this is the reflection I've been doing about the last relationship I was in, which is maybe it was never really there.
Justin,
it's an awful thing to say.
Do you think that you have, do you tend to be the breaker upper as opposed to the broken up?
It's pretty even. I would say
Breaker
or breaky?
Yeah, good. Yeah. It's pretty even.
It's pretty even, I would say. It maybe skewed more toward me doing it because, as I mentioned, I have a hard time committing to things.
Well, so then have you been in relationships? You must have, where the girl breaks up with you because you may be subconsciously forcing her hand.
Well, my brother and friend, we call that a gentleman's breakup. Have you heard of this concept where you... There's nothing gentlemanly about it, so it's misleading, but you are, yeah. You
I kind think of, that's like every breakup I've had.
Yes. You push the person to the point where they're like, yeah. Fine, I'm break yeah. up with you.
It's like, oh yeah, okay, well, you so fuck a bunch of people, and then it's well, like, well, yeah, okay, I guess.
I've never taken the gentleman's breakup that far, in my defense. But yeah, that's happened. Yeah, yeah. So, and the person's like, no, I think we can, I'm not doing it. Just for the record, I'm not the one doing this. But like actions are... clear.
Okay, here, two, you get your choice.
Yeah.
Ooh. When was the last time you had sex in public? The second question you can choose from.
Like Ed McMahon.
How many dates should so you bawdy. Want to sleep together?
That's the thing about The Bachelor, right? It's like, it's so weird to me that they, these are like adults who presumably, most of them have had sex before. There's, you know, the occasional like, I'm a virgin, I'm a born again virgin. I'm like, but whatever that it means. But they spend so long like making out, like hardcore making out, and their hands don't even move into like erogenous areas. Their hands remain on like knees and like, but it's the strangest thing to witness two adults doing that and not getting shifting into a more genital friendly position. Do you know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah.
So I guess it's my way of saying, I don't understand if you click with somebody, it's going to make me sound like a major whore, but I don't understand waiting that long. I mean, if you're like, you know, if things are clicking.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
No, I completely agree with you. I completely agree with you. But you are a whore.
Yeah.
Okay, so, well, which means I agree with you. Okay. Have you ever had sex? You don't yeah. have to answer that if you don't want
well,
to.
Well, what's is our bathrooms? Well, yeah, bathrooms are public. I've had, yeah. But I'm not, that's not in my, that takes usually the other person being the, you know, the one we should do this. And then I get kind of caught up in it. It's not my natural proclivity.
I've been caught twice by the cops.
By the cops?
Yeah, with two different partners. And I have not had that many partners at all, I think, for a 42-year-old.
Sex in public. Wait, I'm like,
oh, yeah.
I remember the first girl I made love to was, I'm laughing because it was.
Because it wasn't so
fast and awful. No, it was just like, yeah, what's yeah. happening? It was, I was a freshman in college and she was a senior and she wanted to, this is not bragging. It was really, I mean, if you could have been there, listeners, if you could have seen it. And she then wanted to have sex in a lot of different locations on campus before she graduated. And so she and she also liked the fact that I was so green.
So she's like,
and she wanted to kind of teach
like
me things
in the quad and like yeah. under like the library, like
places like that. Yeah.
So that,
But my memory is so bad that I'm...
She sounds kind of fucking rad.
Oh, she was great. She was great. And
where
she
is
knows.
She?
She knows who she...
Let's get her on the podcast.
I think she's in Massachusetts. I think she's a veterinarian. She became a veterinarian. She's a very sweet person. So it was great for me because I was so... It was also new to me.
Yeah. You know? So she was like, I'm this confident senior.
Yeah, and like in the library. All these
like
places.
We're going to do
bell
all this
tower.
Crazy stuff. The bell tower.
Yeah. This is... Please cut this because this is like way too much. But I remember being outside with a lady and I was... As we were... making love, I was stung. I was bit by a mosquito, and I slapped the mosquito. It was on my ass, and I slapped the mosquito.
You slapped your own ass.
I slapped my own ass, and I think she thought, and she kind of like was like, oh, like kind of got in.
Yeah.
I think she thought it was a sex move, and not like I just got. I'm gonna have a welt on my ass from a mosquito. And I didn't know how to tell her, oh, no, that wasn't part, you know, and be like, oh, actually, let me explain that.
Okay, do you want to do an improv or should we do calls? But we're
both.
Gonna,
we're
gonna
we do both?
Yeah, we can do both if you don't mind.
Yeah, do you have time? I mean, so
yeah.
You're...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is
I
great.
I love doing improv with you.
I do too.
Okay.
Oh, what if it's bad now? We just raised the bar.
It might be. Who
set
knows?
Ourselves up for failure.
No, I haven't done it for a minute.
Are you improvising now?
I don't know. I might be. Okay, so you have.
I like that your go-to is always like this.
Yes, of course. Well, this is you have a general.
Uh huh.
With Karen Sarducci.
That's who that is.
Yeah, with Karen. Yeah, I'm Karen Sarducci.
Okay, I'm sorry, Karen.
Yeah, no.
We started.
Yeah, no, we haven't started. I am the CEO of Imaginarium Studios.
Oh, well, it's very nice to meet you.
No, you haven't come in yet.
Oh, sorry.
Becca, who's my next meeting?
Justin Long. He was in Jeepers Creepers.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, well, all right. Bring him in. Justin.
Hi, Ms. Sarducci.
Oh, my gosh. I am such a big fan of yours.
That is so nice of you. I've heard so many wonderful things about you as well. Thank you for seeing me.
No. Thank you. I think you're such a brilliant actor, and I know that now you're writing and directing, and that's just incredibly impressive.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Sarducci.
You know, to be proactive in one's own career. Seen you play a variety of roles.
Well, that means the world to me. Coming from you, obviously, somebody who is so gifted and seasoned, if you don't mind me saying.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So are you putting on, are you? Is this for an actual production? I don't know much about this.
So we've acquired the rights to Million Dollar Baby. So we're making a sequel.
Oh.
And I just want to hear your thoughts. Mm-hmm. Nothing's like set in cement.
Okay.
The working title is called Billion Dollar Babes.
That makes sense.
So the character of Hillary Swank hasn't actually died.
Okay.
Okay. So what happens is that she comes out of her death coma, but she doesn't have a tongue anymore. So she needs to learn sign language. So you would be a sign language coach.
Oh, like the miracle teacher. Worker kind of.
Not like Helen Keller, unless you wanted to be blind as well. That might be an interesting twist.
Well, just in the sense of like, I guess, yeah, sorry. Teaching somebody to communicate again and. So that's what I would be the teacher.
That's what my thought was.
Oh.
That's why I brought you in here.
Well, Ms. Sarducci, I would first of all love to be in business with you and
yes.
participate in anything yeah. creative that you do.
Yes,
even this is just such a thrill just to be in your company. But I've never seen Million Dollar Baby.
So just think about the idea of having to teach as Hillary Swank's character realizes that. She cannot speak anymore.
Because she has no tongue.
And gets frustrated in the process of
learning sign
language. She also discovers that she's a lesbian.
Oh.
So your character,
again, the no tongue thing
in terms of a breakthrough,
limit her in that capacity.
Not unlike the Helen Keller moment with the water bucket and the fountain, you bring in a lot of very sexily dressed girls or something like that. So
to try to inspire her?
Yeah.
To
something like that. Million Dollar Babes.
Oh, I see. So this would be her journey into rediscovering her sexuality.
Of course.
Without a tongue.
That's right.
And so I would be kind of her, not her pimp, but more of like a fluffer coach situation.
Is that? No.
I would bring different
your inspiration.
Women in. I would inspire her.
Yes, because she gets frustrated.
Because she has no tongue.
She doesn't know how to learn sign language very well.
Okay, so
her hands are mangled from all the boxing.
Okay, so she'd have to...
So it's difficult for her.
It's difficult for her to connect with women?
It's difficult for her to use sign language.
Okay, so, but for the purposes mostly of connecting with women and making a love connection.
You need to teach her dexterity and give her the inspiration to live again.
Mm-hmm. And sexuality is a big part of...
Yeah, sexuality is a big part of everything, isn't it?
Right. So I would... it'd be a role... So you want me to play that part?
Are you willing to learn sign language?
Absolutely. For you, Ms. Sarducci? That story, it sounds like such a wonderful journey.
Do you need validation?
Parking validation, yep. You're saying. Thank you, Ms. Sarducci.
Thank you so much,
It was so
Justin.
Nice to meet you.
Hi, it's Anna Faris.
Hi.
Hi, thank you so much for talking with us. I'm here with Justin Long.
Hi, Justin. Also, Justin.
Yo, Justin.
Yo.
Will you tell us what's going on?
Yeah. me and my boyfriend of 6 years broke up about 2 months ago now. And it was really abrupt and like weird. He like broke up with me by telling me that he was moving to a different city. And since then, things between us have been really confusing. I don't really know if I'm supposed to still like be his friend because I want to, and we've spoken about that. And like, I sort of like made up my mind about this guy a long time ago about like having him in my life. And he's like my best friend, so I don't want to not be there for him. But I'm just like, I don't know. Is it possible? Can you even be friends with someone you're in love with?
It's funny that this, Justin, this question has been like plaguing me for a while, and it keeps coming up in my life. I don't know how you feel. We were kind of talking about it earlier.
Yeah, we were a little bit. But wait, Justin, I have a few questions. So you guys were together for 6 years. Were you living together for that entirety?
No. So our relationship had gone through what I call, I guess, could call phases. We lived together for 2.5 years of that relationship, and living together wasn't working. So we stopped living together, and it seemed to like be a good thing for us. You know, parameters of our relationship and like all this stuff have sort of ebbed and flowed throughout the entire time. So like, this just seems like a natural progression. And it was weird. Like, we had talked about living together again, after we had done it, like after the whole experience, and then after not living with each other for a while. So yeah, it went like a little bit back and forth.
Justin, okay, so here's my early assessment, and please take this with a grain of salt because I'm totally unqualified to talk about any of this stuff. But it seems to me like your ex has more power in the relationship than you do, which is normal. Like, all power fluctuates. We talk about this on the podcast a bit, but because he says he, you know, wants to move out or whatever, wants to break up, you're confused about why. I think you've probably been feeling a little bit powerless for quite a while, and I don't want you to feel that way. So the silver lining within your heartbreak is like regaining your sense of self. And who you are and what you can do to get like the most joy and fulfillment out of your next relationship.
But Justin, it sounds like you're not quite at that place yet where you, in terms of the grieving process, it sounds like you're still maybe negotiating, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
That you're negotiating, like, because it says in your letter, like, that it sounds like you're still maybe holding out hope that you will get back together, just because the breakup sounded so abrupt that you might not have resigned yourself to not being together.
Definitely, yeah. I think part of it now too is like, now that we aren't, like, he lives in a different city and we don't see each other anymore, obviously, but like we still talk, which is why it's like weird. And it's not like we're having big, long discussions, but like we like say hi and check in with one another and stuff like that.
Wait. Okay, a couple of questions. Number one, was this... And just answer yes or no. Was this your first love?
Yes.
Okay.
He was 19.
And do you initiate the conversations?
Yes. Mm.
Okay. So with first loves, it's so difficult because we were talking about this earlier, like the idea of like, because you're at a place in your life where it's like, who am I? Mm-hmm. Am I, like, I can't believe, like, for me at least, when I was in high school, there was an attractive guy that liked me. When I was a senior, I couldn't believe it because I had just, like, my headgear was just removed. And
he had a headgear fetish, though, and he was upset about that.
But that attachment that happens, and it's important for people to go through. I really believe this. Heartbreak is important for growth in a human. Mm. But So please just keep that in perspective. It's not that you have to embrace that idea. I know that you can't right now because you are heartbroken, but just keep that idea in mind as you go through this journey. I think that my advice to you would be to not reach out anymore, even though I know you miss him desperately.
I completely agree. And I think it's interesting you said about the power dynamic, about the power imbalance. There's an inequity there. And the best way, the only way right now, Justin, you're not going to like to hear this because I've been in your shoes and I hated when people were like, just cut it off. But because you're like, you don't know, like you don't know what we have. I mean, there's all that negotiating that you're doing.
Right.
But I agree with Anna because I think the only way to really get any power back, and it's now it's just power for you. It's to stop communicating and because you're identifying yourself now in this as a member of this relationship, and you have to now start rethinking your own identity. You are no longer a member of this relationship. You are your own autonomous person, and I would say, just enjoy that. Just you know, do all the things that you were held back from doing, and take a trip and start a new hobby. And I mean, all the cliches they tell you to do, I swear to God, they help.
You have to like fight the inclination.
Yeah, I know.
You have
to
fight the inclination, because otherwise it just feels like you shit. Like you're already feeling like shit. And then when you reach out, you don't get a response. It feels so much worse.
There's a great book I'd recommend you read.
Yeah, really does.
Yeah. Oh, it's awful because, but again, the way to get that power back, the way is to go through a couple. It's like any sort of withdrawal. It's like any drug withdrawal. You've seen movies, if you haven't gone through it yourself, where someone's coming off drugs and they have to be like held down and you're throwing up. I mean, it's like that, but for your fucking soul. And right now you're still like trying to dip your toes in, and again, for him, for your ex, that's not an attractive thing. So at the very least, if you just want that power back, which you should want.
And Justin, wait, so all of this came as a surprise, right? Like he didn't give you fair warning necessarily, right?
It seemed so out of left field. Like it seemed like we were actively trying to make this relationship work because it's what we had wanted.
Did the job not seem special enough for him to like leave everything behind, or was it a huge opportunity for him?
It wasn't like, and this was the other weird part, and I don't think I've mentioned this, but like when he told me that he was moving, at first he said that it was going to be like a year and longer, maybe permanent. And then like when we had met in person to like sort of like break up in person, he was like saying that it was only 4 months. So that was there was a level of like, I don't even think he knew how long he was going for or what was happening. And that's also why I wanted to respect this for him, because it was like it was a professional move and he was feeling lost and he wanted this job and I was excited for that. But I guess I was just like so confused as to why the relationship also had to end. I freaked out when he told me, So
you weren't ready.
But Justin, is he moving closer to his hometown?
Yeah, actually he was.
He's young. Is he your age? Is he 25 as well, or close to it?
Yeah, he's the same age as me, 25.
You know, when I was in fact, that's how old we were when we met, Anna. The world seemed like it was all in front of me, you know, and like there were so many things I wanted to experience, and that included people. I remember thinking like, God, there's so many people out there, and every time I go to a different job, I'm on a different set, like I'm meeting these new, sometimes very attractive people, and it was difficult for me. And I'm not saying this sounds like condescending, like you're too young to be in a committed, but is there any part of you that, if you were to, I don't know, shift your way of thinking, is there any part of you that is maybe longs to meet other people and get to know other people, and maybe you could just kind of shift the way you're thinking, knowing that he's your friend, one day it'll come back, even if it's just in friendship form.
Justin, I think this is, oh God, my heart aches for you.
I know, it really sucks.
But I'm telling you, if you can resist the urge to reach out to him, I know it's hard. It's so fucking hard.
No, but it's the only move.
Yeah.
It's the only move because if you are holding out hope that it comes back, it won't if you're like timidly like, hey, like poking him, because clearly he wants to be away now. I know it's hard to understand, but like it, you just have to kind of commit to that now. Yeah. And like, do not just be like a monk, you know, just like, just treat it like
a monk that goes out and parties.
Yeah. A monk that likes to fuck. Yeah. Like most monks, a Benedictine monk, I think that's the order that really fucks up. Yeah, it's true. But my heart too goes out to you. Cause you know, the thing that you said that really got me that I don't know that it's really tough to, is that you guys were such good friends and it's like losing a friend on top of a,
But Justin, please protect your heart just for the time being, just for like at least the next 2 months.
Yeah.
And then please keep in touch. And I would love to talk with you again.
Sorry, there's a great book called The Art of Loving. Justin, I can't recommend this book enough. It's called The Art of Loving by
Written by Justin Long.
Yeah, I wish. But it's so useful, and I think you might find a lot of value in it. It's written by a guy named Eric Froman, I think.
I mean, everyone relates to heartbreak. Everyone.
Yeah.
And I'm so sorry you're going through this.
No, but, and also talk to friends who, because like Anna said, everyone's been through it, and it's nice to remind yourself of that. Like, oh, I'm not in this unique situation that will, you know, I'll get lost in and consumed by, and I'll just drown. I'll be crushed in an avalanche of depression because everyone goes through it. And like,
you wouldn't be human if you didn't.
And talk to your other friends who have gone through it. And it always helped me to find commonality with other people's stories. And so thanks for sharing yours.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank Justin, you so much. I'm not 10.
I love you. And please, please, please let's be in touch. I would love that. Thank you.
I will. Thank you so much. I'm obsessed with you both. Thank you.
Oh, I love you. All right.
Good luck, Justin. You're going to be fine. You're going to be great. You're going to be better.
Moira?
Yes, hi.
Hi. Hi, it's Anna Faris and Justin Long.
Hi, Moira.
Moira, please tell us what's going on.
Yeah, so my boyfriend and I, he's great. This is not like detrimental by any means, not a deal breaker. But I was just always under the impression that when we go to a party and if it's my friends and I get to let loose, or if it's like my people that I know I get to let loose, and if it's his friends, like the reverse, right? That's like, I would feel like that was understood. And I had a party with my coworkers just a few weeks ago. And I was like, okay, like, my friends now, like, you know what that means? And he was like, yeah, I got it, I got it. I was like, okay. He did not get it. He partied super hard, which was great. I was happy he was having a good time. But then I felt like I had to reserve a little bit back, and I was like, I just wanted to celebrate with my coworkers and my I'm friends with the people I work with, my friends. And I kind of got a little mad at him, and I really yelled at him a lot. And I was like, this wasn't right. Like, you got hammered with my work friends, and I didn't get to enjoy my time. I was really upset with him, and he was really hurt by it. I could tell his love language is the words of affirmation, and I was not affirming his actions by any means. Or himself.
Moira, do you mind if I interrupt for just a second? I'm sorry.
Go right ahead.
So he got hammered, but then the behavior that really pissed you off, was that about like, was he overly obnoxious with your coworkers?
Yeah, how does that manifest?
No, not by any means. He wasn't acting out in any way. But that just meant that I had to drive. Then so I kind of had to cut back. Yeah, not necessarily babysit him, but we don't drink often. Yeah, I guess you're right. Kind of had to watch him a little bit. I was just a little concerned.
But he wasn't doing anything to obnoxious, or that would, your friends were like, what's his deal?
Yeah, absolutely not. Oh. Not the case.
Do you have, do either of your parents have any troublesome relationships with alcohol?
Think so. I mean, we're Irish, so we can handle ourselves.
Uh-huh. And when you get drunk, would you say it's manageable for him?
We don't, like, when we drink, it's very infrequent, but I feel like we indulge a little more because we do it so infrequently.
Uh-huh. So what was there a specific moment, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but was there a specific moment of obnoxiousness with a
particular
what was the catalyst for your anger?
The coworker that...
I guess I came to work and someone had brought it up. They're like, oh, he must have had a lot of fun. Like, how was he feeling the next day? And I think that's what really angered me a little bit. So it wasn't exactly his... and if it was me, it would be fine, right? Because I see them on the daily and they know that I can function and I can prove myself in other ways. But that was like, I think the solo instance. And I think it just really bothered me. I was like, great, now they're going to have this image of someone in his head and it's not accurate.
I think this is a problem with like a coworker. You know, we want everyone to like our partners, but this also seems to me like, I don't know what's wrong with that person that they would say something like that. That to me seems kind of rude. Like, don't you think?
It seems judgmental. And like, what are you saying? It's like, would ask my coworker, hey, was it a problem? Did he say something shitty to you? Was he like, did he throw up on your
shoe? Or at this point, maybe not ask anybody at all, but please take that into consideration. Just like you're saying, Justin, what's wrong with, Just absorb that for a second, like how that person feels towards you and if they're competitive towards you.
Moira, what did your boyfriend say when you broached this, like when you brought this up, and how did you bring it up? Like, how did you guys communicate about it?
I came home because this was like right at the end of the day. I think it was like a really long day and I really try not to bring like stress from the work day home, but it was just that last comment of the day just kind of like set everything flying. And I got home and I gave him a call and I was like, hey, where are you at? And then we met up and I was talking to him and then I just kind of like unleashed and I was like, you know what? I really wish you would have respected my wishes. And then as I was going on, I'm an over communicator by any means. So once I start talking, it's just like a snowball effect. I just keep going on and on and on. But as this was going on, I was getting angrier and like louder. And then at the end of the night, I still was kind of like, okay, like all that was valid. And then the next morning I woke up and I was like, oh, that wasn't the way to deal with it.
Yeah. And what was he saying while you were expressing this anger?
He was so apologetic. And he was like, I'm so sorry. Like, I hope I didn't embarrass you. And I was like, no, it's not that. Like, I just didn't want him to feel uncomfortable the next time that he's around.
Well, it is that. I mean, you have to be honest in that moment, too. I mean, you were embarrassed. Like,
I wasn't embarrassed in the moment, but then I guess you're right. Once it was brought up, like later, I was like, great, you were thinking about this for quite some time. And like, how many other times was it brought up? And I was like, I'm not embarrassed myself by any means. I was just more kind of protective of him.
Yeah.
Because I know
of course.
Can get super. He gets super overwhelmed when like he's a top perfectionist.
Sure.
Like he has to be perfect at everything that he does.
So more.
That's something that I was like, yeah.
I have a couple of questions. So are you guys living together?
We do not currently, no.
Okay, so here's the thing. I wonder if you're feeling pressure to get married or to move in or to be sort of whatever, follow the path of whatever we have to do.
Like a more of a commitment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something. And then if you're not feeling completely that, if it expresses its way, like, you know, itself in a different way, because it seems like if he had been, number one, if he had been like, if your coworker had said, oh yeah, he like, felt me up, then that's one thing. Or if another coworker said something like, oh yeah, he told like a racist joke, that's another thing.
While feeling me up. Twofer.
Right. But it doesn't quite seem like, unless there are those specifics or something, that it's quite enough.
Doesn't warrant that kind of reaction.
Yeah.
If I could defend him for a second, he's going to your environment. There's a lot of pressure when it comes to that, like having to make a good impression. And that's why he must have been mortified upon hearing that you were Some
and
of
it
your
was lame of a coworker to say, like, especially if the offense was not that great.
I agree.
You know what I mean? Like, if it wasn't that big of a deal, if it was just like.
But I also understand where Moira is coming from, because I've been in the situation where you're having your time, your fun time is impeded, is hampered because of your partner, like, not having their shit together.
Yeah, but don't you think that, like, for someone to say, oh, your boyfriend was really fucked up. Like that's lame. That's a lame thing to say. And that feels like a competitive thing to say. And that should not be dismissed.
I agree. And this may be reading too much into it. And a lot of dating is, especially when you're 23, it's a vetting process. You're just basically vetting somebody else to see whether or not you can, like, spend the rest of your lives together. I mean, that, for the most part, that's what, like, dating is. So I wonder if there is a part of you, and I don't want to plant any weird seeds, who that may be thinking, I don't know if I don't feel secure in this relationship for other reasons. And this is just a, I don't know, this is just a side effect of that. Yes. You know, this is just a, an excuse.
It feels like a minor offense.
It
like
does.
It's not even an offense. It feels like somebody having like a good time.
Totally. If you're in a secure, strong, like good relationship, you should be able to laugh about that stuff. It certainly shouldn't fester and build up over the course of a day and like, come spilling out, you know, to the part. And, and he must feel really unsafe now too. Like I can only imagine like next time he goes out with you, he'll probably feel like on edge, you know, and I wouldn't want to drink.
Yeah.
If you had to answer who had more power in the relationship, would you say it was you or him?
I would say it's him. Hmm. I know that it makes me sound like I'm like, not a feminist, which I 100%
No.
I think that, I would say he has the more power.
Hmm.
And I don't know why I say that. I don't really have anything to back it up.
Do you think he likes you more than you him?
Well, we've been dating for over 2 years, so I think we're pretty comfortable with each other. Oh, we can have some hard conversations. But, hey, that's a good question. I never really thought about it that way.
When did you have this conversation with him?
This was a few weeks ago.
How have things been since? Has there been tension between you two? Have you gone out since then?
No, we've gone out since then. And it's been fine. Right after the party, we were like laughing at it. And I woke up in the morning and I was like, oh, do you want my boyfriend? Like doing some, you know, kind of making jokes about it. So it was fine then. I mean, I was a little upset that I had to, like, kind of cut back, but in the grant, like, not care. Like, it didn't ruin my night by any means. But then after the comment was made, that's when I was kind of like, am I ignoring something that I shouldn't be?
That's,
like, is that big of a deal?
That's the thing that I wonder about, like, who made that comment and why? Because it feels unnecessary.
And why so it affected
somebody,
you so
somebody,
deep.
Like, that feels very competitive with you. And, like, I don't know who that coworker is. Like, especially as women, we're so prone to anybody's, like, response or whatever. Like,
criticism.
And to our partners, to our friends. I would just think about that part, too. Like, that coworker will not be part of your life forever. And so how you want to examine whatever motive, because a cool person wouldn't ever say something like that. Mm-hmm. I think, don't you think?
Yeah,
I was thinking about it in the reverse effect. Like, if it was me that got, you know, hammered with my, it would be fine. They would have been like, oh, how are you feeling?
Exactly.
Were you a little hurt?
Exactly.
So why is
hurting?
That?
I would have been like, oh, I was fine.
Why is that person has so much more status?
Day.
You know.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
You're so right. It's so smart of you to think about those things because, why exactly what Justin said, why does that person have that status? But it's worth examining because you know how when, a friend tells you like, oh, that person's not all that cute or whatever, or they say, oh, that person's super hot. Like our standards get like, they start to shift. There is that effect of people that are around you, the community. And so just take that into effect because I don't think that your boyfriend did anything wrong.
Yeah, like, I thought okay. The story was going to go, I thought it was going to be like, this was a chronic, this was like the final straw of a chronic problem that you've been dealing with. But also don't be afraid to really examine like why it did have an effect on you and you did get upset and just kinda,
I think it was because of the comment.
No, I do too. But why? What about that comment?
Right,
I hate to say this to you, Moira, because you're being very vulnerable right now and it's nice of you to share the story. But the response you had the next day wasn't like the most loving response. I think you could have handled that in a different way too. And you could have communicated your feelings about it in a different way.
Temper took over for a little bit. I definitely, like, in the moment, I say a lot of things where I'm like, I'm just fuming and I'm just seeing red, and I'm like, why did you have to do that? And then, the next morning after our argument, I was, me yelling at him, I woke up and I was like, I definitely could have handled that in a more efficient manner and not just yelling and lecturing him, but kind of just having a conversation around it. And now that I look back, I feel like this was like my question that I asked myself. I'm like, did it even have to be a conversation? Like, I feel like I overreacted, and now I'm like, I hope he doesn't feel like he has to walk on eggshells.
Just communicate that to him. That's like, easy enough.
Yeah, I totally get that. Like I said, he is such a perfectionist, and I think I don't want to make him feel anything less than that, and I don't want him to make himself feel anything less than that.
You know what you should do? You should go out and have a few drinks with your boyfriend and just, like, kind of be a little drunk and dumb together. Take an Uber.
That's a great fucking idea. Yeah. Truly. Yeah, like have fun together. And don't let whatever fucking bitchy coworkers, like, passing judgment affect your relationship.
God knows where their comments are coming from.
Exactly.
You know, they're probably so unhappy.
That was just fucking lame. Like, no one needs to say that. We all make social mistakes or whatever. They're not even mistakes, but for someone else to
motivations for improvement,
call your boyfriend out on that, even if it's not the person that you're going to be with forever, it still is. It's slightly rude, and just consider the circumstances behind that.
Yeah, and who is that? What are they, like, some Puritan? Like, I mean, I like, he had a few drinks. I'm not advocating, like, alcoholism,
Yeah, it's like, don't be hard on him.
And he felt bad for it. If the next day had been like, whatever, I was partying, that's how I do it, you know, like, he seemed contrite, and he recognized it as being a little excessive.
But also,
make him feel safe.
I'm not even sure. Should have had it.
Well, yeah. This is the wrong two people to be advising on this. I'm like, wait, he didn't throw up on anyone? Oh.
Yeah. Moira, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
And you're amazing. Fun, have fun out there with your friend.
I love you, too. I love you so much.
Guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You say I love you?
No, I don't.
No.
That's a lot. That's a big word. I love you. I mean, I like her very much. I'm fond of her.
Well, I love you.
I love you too. That I can say.
Well, you did it.
Yeah, I don't know, Moira.
Ah,
I know you. I know I love you. It means something.
Thank you,
Moira,
so much.
Moira, I'm fond of. You, I really love.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. Hey, everybody. Please help us build the Unqualified community. Please write down or record your stories and send them to Anna@unqualified.com, or you can send a letter or postcard to Unqualified, P.O. Box 528, 15332, Antioch Street, which is spelled Antioch, Pacific Palisades, California 90272. I can't tell you how excited I would be if I got a postcard from somebody. Thank you guys so much. I love you.